January 19th. He is out of town. He's a Conference of Mayors, is he not? So he's doing some work over at the Council Conference of Mayors in Washington, D.C. Somebody probably should have told me.
We all knew.
Everybody else knew. That's not funny. Item number one, we're going to review items for the agenda. January 23rd, 2012, regular council meeting. Let's start out off page two. Any items on page two? Nothing? Page three? I'm sorry.
You got talk numbers. I'm sorry.
I got to talk numbers. 3D through 5B. How about 5C through 5G? Oh, Dave?
On 5B, there's some bids that got declared like non-responsive or not. It was a weird term that I didn't understand. I was wondering if maybe we could explain that backhoe bid and how that kind of played out.
Pete would be here. Which term were you looking at? The simply non-responsive?
No, there was four, and then the three of them got like thrown out, and then one, and there's ended up only being one that was accepted.
Correct.
But the other three were less expensive from a number standpoint, but I'm presuming there
correct.
Was
they deviated
other
from specs. They didn't meet the specifications that were published in the solicitation. So they didn't meet the city's specifications when we went through the evaluation.
I mean, I don't understand what's complicated about a backhoe. So, I mean, what does it have to have, like, FM stereo or something, or air conditioning? Or what was the thing that deviated from that?
Council member, if you go to, on that backup for the council report, it talks about on the non-responsive bids received from, and there are some provisions that we provided in the bids.
Can you provide
one of the items that two of the bidders did not respond to or refused to provide?
Refused retention. That
yeah.
was the term I did.
So the idea was that when we will withhold the full payment, and I forget how much we withhold.
It's 10%.
We hold back 10% and to allow for us to take the piece of equipment. And I think it's
through an acceptance period.
30 days. 30 days. And at the end of the 30 days, if the piece of equipment is performing as we expected, then we will remit the final 10%. And that's we required that of all the bidders. And
can we
there
do
were,
that for cars and trucks and all that?
We do it especially for the large specialized pieces of equipment. Just to make
it's kind of a backhoe, isn't it? I'm just trying to understand
well,
here.
You know, but we don't buy a lot of backhoes, and so, you know, we want to make sure that it's working when we receive it, and we give it that 30 days, and then we...
Has that been a problem in the past?
I don't think so. It's the first time I've seen this many of them that refuse to make that provision. I
just
felt
a little uncomfortable when we winnowed it all down, getting to only one bid, and especially when you looked at the prices for some of the others were $20,000 less, you know, that's almost the 10% there alone. So, I think it almost there would be some wisdom in maybe clarifying the way we did our bid and running it through again, unless we're in this breathless rush for a backhoe.
Councilmember, I think we can have Pete here on Monday afternoon. I don't see him in the audience right now. We can have Pete here on Monday afternoon, and he can explain if this has been a real serious issue on the backhoes and other equipment like this.
Okay. Yeah.
Talk about it Monday then.
I've had conversations with, we've met with one of the companies and talked to them about why there was more than just the payment retention. There's the issue
there was
about us being able to do the warranty work. We require that all of these allows that they pay us to do the warranty work, so we don't have to keep we don't have to take the equipment off site to get the warranty work. We do it in house, and then our staff gets reimbursed for that. One of the companies that got eliminated were non-responsive didn't allow for that, and so we went with the company in the day, and while it's a little bit more, we felt like the savings of making sure we have a product that works after 30 days and the warranty work is huge for us because it eliminates significantly the downtime for the vehicle. So if we're doing the warranty work and the maintenance or repairs, we don't have to trailer it up, haul it off site. We can just take it to our shops. We do the warranty work in-house, and we've been doing that. We do it for solid waste trucks. We do it for a lot of our vehicles, and we found out it saves us a significant amount of resources, especially the time down for the piece of equipment.
So then that $20,000 gets eaten up pretty quick.
It especially on that element, and I know one of these, that was one of their areas that one of the local companies, I'm trying to have outreach with their folks to talk about why that's so important to us, because it is something that's critical to us to keep, because we don't have a lot of backhoes, but when a backhoe goes down, it can shut down our work. And so we probably on some piece of equipment kind of have these higher standards than we would maybe, like you said, for the ordinary fleet, whether it's police cars or other fleet, because a piece of equipment like this go down can shut down a project that our crews are working on for a significant amount of time.
All right, thanks.
But we'll have Pete here on Monday, too, if there's any additional questions.
Okay.
5C through 5G. Oh. Don't go too far.
Hey.
Come back.
Alex. Sorry. Didn't mean to say hey. Just good morning. On 5C and D, I know we've made quite a few efforts to reach out locally and see what we could do. I didn't have a chance to read this report, but I was just curious. Is there a way maybe you could kind of just let us know really quickly what, you know, as we went through this bid and what we did get responses for?
Okay. Yes, we did talk to the local company that we expected would participate, and they admitted that they blew this one. They got it. They got the bid opportunity. They just blew it. We have had conversations with them.
Blew it is kind of a legal term. Can you give us some more specific?
Sure. The paperwork got lost somewhere between the mail delivery.
We forwarded them the request. Yes. We notified them in writing.
Yes.
And it didn't make it from one desk to the other.
Correct.
As I understand it. We did we followed up and called up and said, what happened? When did you respond?
Yeah.
And one person said, we didn't know anything about it, and they found it on another desk.
And so we have had conversations with them. They are interested in participating in the future. We've established some relationships that perhaps had weakened over the years due to changing personnel. And we do have a bid out on the street right now for some vehicles for fire, and we do anticipate they'll respond to that one. So I think we've corrected the problem.
Yeah. You know, I appreciate those efforts, and I know what you're doing, and I think it means a lot. My thing has always been, hey, it's got to be the best buy for the, you know, for the citizens, but making sure everybody's had the opportunity, and so I think that sends a great message that we're reaching out, making sure that everybody's, and you know, mistakes happen, but I appreciate the effort. And the other part too is, you know, Pete's not here, but just to realize what's been going on there in Fleet. Has been really positive, really looking at our overall fleet, how we utilize it, the number of miles every year. And I think that's been, I had an opportunity to head out to that and meet with them and see what they're doing. I think the citizens would appreciate how we're utilizing our fleet and how we're making some changes to save millions of dollars in the long run. So I appreciate
that. Thank
efforts.
You. And just quickly, Mayor and Council, one of the items regarding the purchase of vehicles, we now have in our, and we've mentioned this before, but it certainly is going to, I think, be more significant. If we can get the local vendors to bid on these, we do have consideration now of counting the sales tax that the city would receive as a
correct
credit. I'm not sure what the right term is.
It's an offset.
Offset against the bid amount, so that we can demonstrate that really is a net benefit to the city. So we're trying to encourage that participation as much as possible.
And now we have a new legal term for when a paper doesn't make it from one desk to the other. Awesome. 5C to 5G. Nothing. 5H to 5K. 5I, Debbie, is District 6, not District 5. So I don't know if that's going to create any problems.
We'll make sure that changes.
If we just change that. Unless you got Pecos Road.
No.
We did redistrict.
We did.
No.
I
don't think you went.
No. Not that far.
We 5L through 6D. Mr. Brady, on 5L for their Greenfield water reclamation plant. As I recall, that damage was from an employee who sabotaged?
No.
Is that it, or is this something different? This is something different?
Yeah. Right.
This was the more recent incident.
Yeah. Oh. Good morning, Vice Mayor. No, this was an electrical short that created some damage to one of the electrical feeds to the solids building.
Okay. I remember that.
Yeah. So we have two feeds. We're running off the other feed right now, but, of course, we want to repair so that we have both feeds for redundancy.
While we're on that topic, what can you tell us what actually happened? Because the report said water was leaking, and was there a reason the water was leaking, and we're fixing that too?
Right, yeah. What's happening is we've been having some issues with ammonia at the plant, and so we were trying to redirect some of the centrate, which is the liquid that you get after the solids have gone through the centrifuges. We were trying to redirect that to the front of the plant, and we had a bit of a constraint, like a plug in one of those tubes, and so it spilled out onto the floor, and managed to get like through the seals in close to the wall near the electrical duct bank, and so yeah, some water got in there that shouldn't have gotten in there and caused the short.
And is there like an alarm system when that, like, you get a plug like that normally, or?
Normally there is. The alarm was actually disabled at that time because we were trying to redirect the centrate to the front of the plant, unfortunately. We've now come up with a way to redirect the alarm so that we don't have to turn it off, but it can be altered so that we would be alerted were this ever to happen again. We're also looking at a more long-term fix of getting a more formalized way to take the centrate from that portion of the plant back to the headworks.
Great. Thank you.
So at the waste treatment plant, stuff happens, right?
Yeah. Hmm. Yes, Vice Mayor. Thank you.
That was a pretty... a lot of things had to go wrong for that to happen. It's early, and I wasn't expecting to be here. Item 6E. Mr. Brady, do we want to say anything about this? This is kind of a big deal.
We are, and it's actually on our agenda to talk about in our study session.
Okay.
So we have a full presentation,
that's right,
I believe, for that. Correct, Mr. Rigby?
We'll have a whole presentation. 6F through 6I. Anything? How about 6G? Do we want to talk about that a little bit? Do we have anybody from fire here?
We do have somebody
from fire. I saw the shirt earlier today.
It's kind of hard to hide in the uniform. Vice Mayor, Council. We'll be making a presentation to you on Monday, giving you a full rundown on the document you have here. But in brief, we've had the opportunity to apply for a concept grant. It's different than any of the grant we've ever done before. Usually we either get stuff or service. We either buy a piece of equipment or we get money for training or something like this. This is a concept that the health department for the federal government is looking to lower Medicare and Medicaid cost. We feel that with our TRV program and our pilots that we've done with our PA, we stand a pretty good chance of getting approval for this grant. We'll have a three-year opportunity to implement programs that potentially save cost in the Medicare and Medicaid billing process. There, at the end of the 3 years, there is no obligation to the city to carry anything forward. We hope to prepare a decent program that we can return back to the federal government that shows the cost savings. If so, and it works out well for us, we will also submit a program that implements potentially something for the city of Mesa. But we are under no obligation. We have no forward decisions down in the future to carry this out. We're not looking at bringing on a lot of FTEs to start with. We're going to be looking at contracting most of the people we have in here. We're doing some kind of callback to fill vacancies until we can see how this program runs. But we'll have a full presentation for you on Monday.
Fantastic. This program was identified when I was back in D.C. in December for the National EMS Advisory Council, and Office of Medicare and Medicaid made us aware that they had just released it the week before I was there. We had to do a letter of interest within 2 weeks, and the submittal is this month. So they gave us a whole 2 months to complete for an application for a competitive grant. And when I saw this, it just struck me that the TRV program with the nurse practitioners or the physician assistants really was an excellent opportunity to help expand that program and see how we can reduce the burden on the fire department, for particularly for non-emergency medical services, but also work in partnership with our local hospitals on improving out-of-hospital health care, reducing the number of ER trips, unnecessary ER trips in particular. But also one of the issues that they're having is that they want to prevent our hospital readmissions. So the ability to do some outreach programs through the TRV in partnership here would be an excellent opportunity. And so Medicaid and Medicare are interested in, through this grant, in helping to fund these ideas to see how well they work. So we'll also work on some cost recovery, but we'll get more of that on Monday, correct?
We will have a little bit more on Monday. Vice Mayor, as you stated, this has been a very short window for a grant of this kind. It's a $1 billion nationwide grant. And we got the information shortly before Christmas, right before all the holiday stuff started setting in. So we've got staff scrambling to get as much information as we can about this. But we will have more for you on Monday.
Well, your grant writer works, I think, at 2:03, so he didn't get any sleep anyway. So
no, he doesn't. So that works out perfect. Well for us.
So it worked out well for us. All right. So 6J through 7A, anything on that?
Vice Mayor, we're going to remove 7A.
Remove 7A. I think we're going to have some more meetings on some of these.
Community, yeah.
More outreach. Excellent. 7B through 9A. Nine B through 9E. Nine F through 12. Excellent. Okay. Let's move on to item 2A, which is to your presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the Series 2012 General Obligation Utility Systems Revenue and Street and Highway User Revenue Bonds.
Good morning, Vice Mayor.
This is going to be riveting.
This is good stuff.
This is actually going to be interesting.
This is going to be very good stuff for the city. This is we've been using the word transformational. This could be transformational for the city. So we'll walk through the presentation at one point. I said it was going to be riveting. It is. We've been waiting for this day for many years, so we're ready to pull the trigger here.
A unique opportunity.
You have Alex sitting up. He's excited. Yes.
Can I ask a question before we even start that didn't make any sense? Can you explain refunding before
I will do that.
I'm sorry.
And in its simplest form, it's like a home refinancing.
Well, why didn't you say that?
Because there are legal and technical terms we're having to follow. And because it's so technical, we also have our financial advisor from Wedbush Securities, Larry Given. And because there's so many legal factors, we also have Scott Ruby from Gus Rosenfeld, who's our bond counsel on this. So we're here to discuss four potential bond refundings. And I want to say potential because it's all based on market conditions and the savings that are generated according to these. Everything that we've done has been generated on estimates at the 1st of January. So we're counting on market conditions to continue in their present condition. So, again, it's very legally complex and technically difficult to execute these things, but in the simplest form, the first three are like an exchange of interest rates. So you're just going in and we're streamlined mortgaging and we're exchanging interest rates. Very simple. We're looking for authorization on general obligation bonds for $40 million. And that represents right now about $31 million in potential principal refinancing. We're asking for the extra just because we've identified some potential opportunities. If the market conditions get better, I would imagine you'd want us to take full advantage of the savings that we could get. That same concept goes into the utility systems revenue bonds for $50 million, and that's about $35.1 million in principal, and the HERF bonds about $55 million for $40.3 million. And did I see a question?
Hold on. Yeah.
in the terms of home refinancing, sometimes when we refinance our house, we realize some of our payment reduction because we've lengthened our term back to 30 years. How does this affect our term?
This one, we're going to get into that. The way these have been structured, and I'll get to the good part first, is these are just really exchanging the interest rate. We're not extending the length of term, and we're taking most of the savings in this fiscal year. So we're taking all the benefit at the earliest we possibly can. There are some small savings throughout the period, but we're just really exchanging the interest rates from where they currently are on our existing to the current market rates.
Alex? A quick question. I noticed you haven't mentioned those interest rates because we don't know exactly what those will be, but roughly, do you have a guesstimate?
What were these assumptions made?
I'm going to let Larry answer those because they're blended rates.
It's a Vice Mayor, good morning. Councilmember Finter, I'm looking through this. Now, let's take as an example the general obligation refunding issue. Right now, we're anticipating refunding two different series of bonds from 2002 and 2003. And the average interest rates on those bonds, just roughly, I don't have that calculated, it's about 4.25%. And as of the first week in January, where market rates were approximately at that time, the average rate that we'd be reissuing the bonds at was about 2.15%. So just imagine your home mortgage, just replacing the interest rates, not changing the term of the bonds. And as Chuck said, in all three of these initial conversations, these three tax-exempt issues we're proposing, we don't change the term. We have savings every year, but we're able to structure the savings so most of it occurs in this fiscal year for each of these three first three issues.
And Mayor and Council, we also established kind of a threshold area as far as what the net the savings has to be.
I think the city's policy is at least 3% net present value savings after all expenses are paid on the principal amount of the refunded debt.
So that includes the whole stream going for all the, you know, even if we were to extend it, which we're not, that would be included in that calculation to determine whether or not we've met that threshold of the 3%. And I think, and as you'll see a slide here later that shows that we're far exceeding that 3% savings.
Councilwoman Higgins?
Can you repeat what you said about 3% net present value moving?
Okay, well, what we do is we do a calculation to get to the net present value savings. And what that is we discount the two cash flows, both the refunded debt and the refunding bonds, the new bonds that we issue, discount them back at the interest rate of the refunding issue to the date of issuance to get a clear picture of what are those savings represent in today's dollars, not something in the future, but discount them back at the same interest rate. And the net present value savings after all expenses of those two, the difference in those two cash flows is what we're talking about. It has to be at least 3% of the principal amount of the refunded debt. So as an example, if you're refunding $50 million, it'd have to be $1.5 million in savings before we do it. Now, the reason that Chuck's touched on this, the reason that we're looking at smaller refunding issues, but we're asking for not to exceed larger amount, is there are some maturities of some other issues out there that may come into play if market conditions improve. Right now, we're not recommending it, but we thought that the City Council would like to give us the authorization to refund more bonds if the savings opportunity is there.
Okay, so follow up.
Yep.
And that's exclusive, or that's including all fees and transfer and stuff. So why don't we go with a lower number? Why don't we say 1%? Because when we're talking such big numbers, it's still a large sum of money after, you know, is it net of fees and stuff? So
yeah,
why do we just say 3%?
3% is still a pretty... that's just kind of a standard number in the effort to put these deals together and do them often. Now, that's one issue, is meeting that net present value savings. The other limitation is, frankly, not all outstanding bond series or even callable for us to refund. I mean, they may be at an even higher rate than what Larry just told you, but the way they're not in a position where we can take advantage of them today. They weren't sold that allowed us to refund. Am I saying that at this point?
And that's true, Mr. Manager, but also there are some bonds out there at even higher rates that aren't callable for a number of years.
Right.
These are callable all within the next 18 months. Yeah, and there's a difficulty in refunding bonds that aren't callable for, you know, for 5 years from now, 6 years from now, which I won't go into the technical aspects of that necessarily, but it has to do with the reinvestment rates that we can reinvest these proceeds at.
Okay.
So... there are going to be some opportunities in the future if things change with Treasury rates going forward.
So we look at all those things. It's not like, oh, it's got to be 3% or nothing.
We've been waiting for 2012 since 2006. Yeah.
This is a continuous review for us. Okay. We'll take this opportunity anytime it presents itself. Yeah. You can count
on
that.
This year was
unique,
significant for us.
Great, thank you.
And just to give you an idea, on slide 3 is the series that we're talking about and potential series of each of the GO utility systems and the HERF bonds that we would potentially be refunding from. So on slide 4, that just gets into the savings calculation that you can see. The net present value savings on those GO bonds is estimated at 5.3, 7.2, 7.1 on utility systems, and almost 6% on the HERF bonds for some significant amounts of money in a current year savings. Now, as I talked about earlier, I just want to reiterate this. The savings are going to come in 11-12, and then they're going to retain the completion of their existing debt service payment length of time. Okay. That was on tax exempt. That is our typical issuance of bonds for the city. Now, we have a unique situation because of the call features. We can't violate the call features in what our existing tax exempt issuances are for utility systems. However, we could convert some of this debt to taxable and call some of this debt and restructure. So what we're looking for today, and I'm going to get into a graphic because I want to show you what we're trying to accomplish, but we're looking for approval or authorization not to exceed $100 million in authorization for utility systems refunding taxable bonds, and that would affect Series 2002 and 2000A. And it's about just under $77 million in current principal we're looking at. But if you look at the graph on page 7, this is graphically. Currently, the debt is that blue line. Our debt threshold, as I'm calling it, is about $77.5 million in the combined utility systems. What you can see what we're trying to accomplish, we have been fighting, as you know, in our rate discussions, getting to that debt level and maintaining and modeling out our rates into the future. That has been largely pushed by the debt structure that we've been subject to since way back, and Larry's been here for a long time, since at least 2002, 2003, some of the debt structure. And they have not been callable. Now, what the unique situation is here is now the interest rates on the taxable bonds has narrowed in comparison to the tax-exempt bonds. So we could, at a certain amount of cost, and we'll get into that, convert these bonds into taxable, narrow the interest rates. It allows us to ignore some of the call features. Now we're issuing new bonds for these and call these early. So that's the simplest discussion of how we would do it. Now, the significant part, if you look at the top of the blue line at $77.5 million, and you see the black line, which is the restructured debt, potentially restructured debt, we're at just about $66 million. Well, you can see the difference in the cash flows that will generate in the combined utility systems. It allows us a lot of consideration into the future, and we're going to get into those discussions. Okay? So I want to refer back to this if you have any questions. The one thing I do want to point out also, you can see on the black line, we'd have some peak load debt. We would still be looking for potential smoothing and restructuring of that every year also. But right now, this doesn't make sense beyond time.
Let's clarify, Chuck or Larry, is that when we take out this tax-exempt debt with taxable notes, that we have the option down the road, we can actually refund those out with tax-exempt debt later on down the road. Is that correct?
Correct. So we're going to have a cost to doing this. So this is like the refinancing cost. But one of the potential things we could do is each year we can look at the potential reconverting this taxable debt to non-taxable or tax-exempt and looking for those opportunities because that's historically lower rates than what the tax rates are. So we would be looking for those just on a recapture basis each year.
And just to give you the council an example, this is for the last 6 years, we've been having to come to council with proposing some significant rate increases. Specifically, I mean, this includes the entire utility system, but the main drivers there are usually water and wastewater. And the debt obligations for those have been increasing. I have a chart in front of me that says utility system bond debt in 2007 was just below, probably about $33 million. Today, 2013, 2012, $77.5 million. So we've been climbing this very steep curve, and we've had to do that through rate increases, majority. I mean, we've had some growth in the system, but that's where every year when we come to council, it's not so much because the operations side is growing in cost, it's we've had to meet our obligations on the debt. And even though, as you can see, this plateau that we reach in 2013 goes for about 5 years, I think.
5 years.
Or so at that $77.5 million. We had each year, we were building up to that plateau. And then beyond that, the assumption is, you know, it would drop off. What you don't see on this chart, before everybody gets really excited, we don't show our forecast of capacity we're going to need for new debt for additional projects. And there's some big projects out there. But there is that gap between the blue line and the black line right there in that front page, front part of that graph is savings, immediate savings in the first 5 years. And we'll talk about that amount. But that's what makes this very attractive to us. It also resets our total debt service and a smooth curve. And we've really challenged, and Larry's done a good job for us, trying to maintain a more certain, we don't have these kind of lifts in our debt service schedule out into the future, so we can create some certainty. And then as we issue new debt, we just layer that on, and they may be a little bit higher, but we keep a certain amount. Just like when you pay your mortgage, you know, 1 year you don't want to be paying, you know, $5, and the next year $20, and then 15 or 20, 20, 20, and then 10. And we're trying to do the same thing in house, is to create that certainty in our debt service schedule.
Dennis?
So, Chris, what I hear you saying is that if we do this, then I guess the bottom line for our residents in terms of utility bills, that in the future we may not have to go through the forecasted rate increases, or at least at the same rate that we'd looked at. So this
right.
might provide significant relief to residents in the future in terms of utility bills
right.
because of the restructuring of what you want to do here. But you're also going to, at the same time, use the savings to pay for projects that are important and needed to maintain and expand the system. Is that right?
All those are right on point. So, one, you know, we were going to, under the prior forecasts and trying to get to this high level, we're going to have to come talk about rate increases. I don't expect that with this schedule that we're going to have to come to council and talk about rate increases, certainly in water and sewer, for the next couple of years. This will provide that immediate type of release. It also, as you mentioned, provides us, and we need to come to council here. We've got a plan to come to you real quickly here at the beginning of the year to talk about our capital improvement program for utilities. As we anticipate, again, you know, continued development of the infrastructure, that will help us in absorbing some of that capacity or cost and debt service that's already now built in to our current rates. So the need to add even additional increases for new debt or new future improvements will be dramatically impact or mitigated against that. So we won't have to see, even for future growth, we won't have to see that. Additionally, in these first 5 years, the enterprise fund, and the enterprise fund includes a lot of things, not just water and utilities, but it includes spring training. It includes, we've talked about, an economic development funding. So it provides some opportunities there. But it provides, I think, primarily for the beginning of this, it provides tremendous rate pressure relief to our utility customers from the beginning.
Okay. Dave?
The last time we had a rate discussion, we talked maybe about restructuring the way we do rates a little bit, where we decouple the cost of the system from the commodity charge. Mm-hmm. And we've had a lot of angst over folks that have had to pay the 3,000 minimum gallon water charge. And I, at the time, advocated getting towards a gallon one commodity charge and then having a charge for the cost of running the system. So if you want to be hooked to the system and have a pipe into your house, there's one charge. And the first gallon you use, that's when you get charged for that. So it really helps drive water conservation, and those that don't use a lot pay less, obviously. Does this open a window to be able to talk about that rate structure somehow?
We can certainly have those rate structure. The only caution I have is I think we need a year to study. I think what we did last year was pretty dramatic.
I agree.
I think it's nice to always kind of let that kind of settle in. But maybe it's a good conversation to begin those concept plans. I think what it does just really for the council is it allows us to kind of step back from the pressure of having to, you know, deal with these rate increases that we were going to have to come to just because, and it's debt, and we were going to have to meet those obligations. And so I think this, and it kind of lets us long term, and I'm kind of waiting for this to happen. Then we'll pour it into the forecast, and we can come back. I mean, these are right now, we're giving you our best guess of what's going to happen. But I think knowing Larry, he's pretty good at being pretty conservative on this. But for us, this is a tremendous opportunity for the city. It provides some. Now, there is some cost. There is cost to this. There is a cost to us for getting this tremendous amount of cash. Or making available these rates, reduced rates or reduced debt service in the beginning years. And we do, in this case, do pay more on the out years. And I think we've estimated that's going to – let's go to the next slide so we can talk in consideration of the total debt save. Go through that. Let me get to that point here. Just go get your savings out first.
Okay. And we can talk about the cost. Let's go to slide number 9.
There we go.
In the first 5 years, we had to generate additional cash flow. It's not from new revenues, it's just the cash flow situation.
Don't have to change the rates and remain the same, and so it generates additional cash.
At just under $57 million. And you know that we do the way we do our forecast, we take those fund balances and we smooth out throughout the years, and we'll come back with new models related to this to present to you. What we'll also do with those new models is come back and try to predict what we estimate our peak new threshold would be that we calculate our rates about. So to get back to having the conversation, it would be a good conversation to have on the capital portion, but we need a better picture of what that full capital cost would be with new growth, and I don't think we've done a good analysis of that yet. We've been basing it on the debt related to these rates. So it's a twist in the conversation, and I do think we need some more research there. But if we were going to do that, we probably generate a peak under $70 million just estimating on our current. So we've dropped, ignoring anything into the future, with new issuances, now taking those into account, we dropped from a 77.5 to probably under a 70 million peak debt load related to the utilities. So that gives you a lot of freedom into the future related to the rates, and it's a different conversations about rates. Okay? So,
I guess as part of this, I mean, I just like to model that out about how what's that the charge to be hooked to the system per customer per month.
We can talk about
all that.
Absolutely, we can talk about. And you're right, because we're going to reset it back to kind of this longer term perspective. It gives us better information to use as opposed to having this inflated.
Right.
Debt service.
Yeah, it was like $52 a customer per month was the real cost
right.
of being hooked to the system. And so that changes. This changes that dynamic
quite a bit.
So.
Yeah, and so let us go. We need to go through the analysis. What we've got to come back to the council and have a conversation, I think, first is what we see as the needs going out into the future in the utility system. Mm-hmm. And this structure is going to be in a great position for us, but we just need to all – there's some big plants and things that need to be taken care of. We need to take care of septic to sewer repairs. We've got treatment plants that need to be built, and we've got greenfield wastewater treatment plants that need to be expanded. So we've got, and they come in these big chunks, but this gives us an opportunity to kind of see how we can kind of try to smooth those out over time. So we have some work to do. We'll come back to you, and once we have that built in, Councilor Richens, then I think it allows us to have that conversation you're talking about.
Well, rebound in the housing market is going to be an important element to this too, because we had an issue with foreclosures and the lack of payments from those houses being one of the issues that we
have. And we are going to talk to council. We have our strategic planning process and forecast, and we are seeing a little bit of improvement in the number of residential hookups going on, that where last year was the reverse. That's correct.
Alex? Just again, if you could clarify on slide number 9, then you say, without any future for the next 5 years, no future rate increases, if we're able to achieve.
Let's be careful saying that.
Here's the way I would describe it. Okay. If we did nothing from today forward, and just say, because we know we're going to have to issue some new debt each year because of the capital needs.
Right.
But if we ignore that, 5 years we're going to generate an additional. So from just changing the peak debt load, that changes the cash flow situation by $57 million.
Okay, and you mentioned a $70 million figure. What was
that is the new peak. If you look back on slide 7, on the black line, under the current structure that we're not able to restructure at this time, that is the new peak load. I estimate, given now if I take back those things, knowing if we just did things as usual, Councilman Richens, our debt service load would probably be, I could safely say, under $70 million a year, ignoring any of the growth factors that I have to do with like a large plant for $140 or $150 million. So it changes the dynamic of how we've had to address the rates related to debt significantly.
Going, Councilman Finter, to go back to your point, I think what we would say, we feel comfortable saying today, probably not, because we don't know what priorities of the fund and what's going on, but I feel very comfortable saying at least for the next year or 2 years, I think that with this kind of savings and opportunity to restructure, I don't anticipate that we would have to come and ask, and I'm specifically talking water and wastewater specifically, just because I haven't had a chance to look at the other two right now. This certainly would be an opportunity where we could look at where we wouldn't have to pass on additional rate increases. You know, now I would say that's subject to the legislature, you know, getting out of session.
And, we're going to pay for it.
And who knows what else may be out there. But
And just to let you, one utility would not be able to participate in this refunding because electric utility did not have any debt out at this time. So we'll be looking at the dynamics of the electric utility in relation to all the others when we come forward with the forecast. Okay.
This helps tamp down some of the increases, but it'd be unrealistic to think that we're not going to have any growth or any changes to the system. I mean, we're a family living in a 100-year-old house, and we know that we're going to have some pipe replacements coming. We're going to have to make some updates on the west side. We're also a growing family still. So east side is going to need some brand new infrastructures. We're going to have to add on to this house as well as repair the older sections. Right. So, but the fact that we can refinance this debt at a lower rate and smooth things out really helps to absorb some of the shock and some of the future rate increases. So we will be seeing smaller rate increases than we would otherwise anticipate.
So why don't we talk about
how we're going to do this?
How we're going to do this and the cost.
If we'll go to slide 10. Okay, as we said earlier, we've been restricted by the call features because it's been tax-exempt debt. So we're proposing to issue taxable utility bonds, and that's allowed us in this market because the rates have narrowed. And just to correct a little bit there, Vice Mayor, the taxable will be slightly higher rates. That's where the cost comes in on this restructuring. So it's a very slight increase in interest rates, but our plan is to recapture that into the future and those costs by reconverting potentially back into tax-exempt bonds in the long term, okay? So this allows us to ignore those call features that are related to the tax-exempt by issuing the taxable. Then we'll use those proceeds to refund the tax-exempt 2002 issuances and then allow us to do the restructuring that you saw on that graph. The potential cost, and I said potential cost is because I do think Larry has been quite conservative in his estimates, but it'd be under the 4th of January's estimates about $9.2 million because of the interest rate differential. And again, we would be looking to recapture some of that cost with the future refundings.
Okay.
And then we get into the positive side of this, and we've talked about some of this. We've talked about reconsideration of the recently modeled future rate increases, and I'm just going back to the spring when we presented that set of models to you. We can improve our revenue to debt service coverage requirements. We are required under bond covenants to have at least a 1.75. This improves that coverage ratio significantly. It reduces our fund balance reserve requirements, and if we want to get into the technicality of that, Larry can answer those. And
but
it allows,
again, that goes to that can help certainly with rates too, because we're not having to setting so much aside in the fund balance. We can free some of that up as to go into the overall operations and determine how much what our needs are. So we're generating a lot more revenue than we need because we have to put so much aside in a reserve.
And as of you've all picked up on, it would allow for the consideration of additional cash-funded projects under these scenarios. So just give you kind of a calendar, potential calendar. This is so new, we're going to give you date ranges because we haven't had time to get a calendar together. The week of January the 3rd, which is this next week, so Monday if you give us authorization, we have already sent out requests for proposals so that we can act quickly as possible. There was no obligation to do that, so we'll have responses to this situation by next week. The weeks of February 27th and the 5th, we're going to go to market and price the tax-exempt refunding issues. The week of the 19th of March, we're going to go to market and price the taxable utility systems revenue issue. And the week of the 2nd of April, we'll close the tax-exempt refunding. And the week of April 23rd, close the taxable refunding issue.
Questions, comments, or profanities? As soon as I said profanities, Alex raised his hand.
Quite the opposite. You know, what an amazing effort. I think it's fair to note, and I don't know if we have any of that information, I believe we're one of the least debted local governments in the Valley from that the past information, recent past information that's been given. So I think that should be taken in consideration as people maybe read about this or, you know, have inquiries. The other is in these most difficult of financial times, we went through a review through Moody's and S&P, and were upgraded, you know, almost at the same time that our federal government and lots of other nations and across the world are being downgraded. So I think that says quite a positive for the efforts that go on here in Mesa and what's occurring. So I think this is just another exciting aspect of good management and good positive things that are happening in the community. So I support the effort completely. Thank you, Vice Mayor.
Very good. You need direction on this?
We just want to brief you because these are the items that are on the agenda for Monday. So it was our way of kind of giving you some background. So
you get your
we'll look at that direction on Monday.
Very good.
Thank you.
All right. Landscaping. Thank you.
Here, presentation on City Plaza Landscaping Transformation Project.
Thank you. Good morning, Vice Mayor Summers and Council. I am Donna DeFrancesco with Development and Sustainability Department. You can see I'm here with a group today. I'm here with Dennis Ray from Facilities Maintenance. Over to my left is our landscape architect, Steve Stettler from Engineering, and Laura Heineman, also from Development and Sustainability. And we wanted to take this opportunity to make you aware of the exciting transformation of our landscape over at the Mesa City Plaza building. As you know, as part of our water conservation programs, the city does offer a grass to xeriscape rebate. That is an incentive program for our residential customers, so that we are encouraging them to remove grass at least 500 square feet or more, and they can receive a $500 rebate. And the program is to really help to save water, of course. We get nudged from budget on this one, of course, when our revenues are down, but it really is impactful. You can see savings of 20,000 gallons a year for every 1,000 square feet removed. We recently received a grant from the Bureau of Reclamation that allowed us to expand the program for commercial property. So in the grant, we asked for to be able to provide rebates for HOAs, multifamily, and we also put in some funds, asked for funds to do municipal projects so we could be, you know, doing as we're asking our customers to do. So we met with facilities to discuss potential conversion sites, and we got very excited when we started looking at the grassy area that's on the north side of the City Plaza building, realizing there's just great opportunity for, you know, it's public visibility and to help educate citizens as well. The grant provided us with some really good seed money to kind of transform this space. And you can see kind of from the pictures here, the grassy area is a little bit sloped. Those can be challenging areas for watering without having runoff issues and things like that. We were finding in some of the areas where the trees had grown that some of the grass was starting to die out, and it's difficult to keep growing in those areas because of the shade. So this was just a great opportunity. The more we looked at the space overall, though, the more we saw that there, you know, landscapes do decline over time. It's like anything else, needs some maintenance. So we really saw that there was some opportunity to really look at a bigger plan for this area, not only to just make this conversion, but perhaps a bigger plan. As you know, for any great projects to happen, you need a great plan to start with. And Laura's going to tell you a little bit more how we came up with that.
We first reached out to the landscape design professionals that we've worked with on city projects, Wendy Lesweer of the Design Review Board and Jeff Engelman, who designed, his firm designed Princess Park here in Mesa. At the same time, we were meeting with Trevor Bargas with DMB, and he heard about this project and got very excited and offered to contact his fellow landscape architects in the community and put together a charrette. If you're not familiar with the term charrette, it is a focused planning session where designers collaborate and establish a vision for a project. Well, we had 12 talented landscape design professionals work with us on this. They donated their time, their talent, and their technical expertise to help us create this sustainable landscaping project. During the charrette, the group focused on placemaking. It's a way of transforming a physical environment to create a sense of place. In this case, for the Mesa City Plaza building, it was a sense that you had arrived at one of our city's most important buildings. In fact, when we talked to Mr. Brady about this project, he talked about the importance of that walkway from the parking lot to the main entry of the City Plaza building. Here, this sketch represents some of the outcomes of that charrette, the artistry that is behind each design. The designers agreed that there were a lot of different types of trees and other elements in the landscape out there, and the new landscaping design should unify the site with an understory plantings, consistent understory plantings, and the use of desert cobble, which you're going to see a photograph in a little while, but it is this wonderful gravel setting that kind of reflects the desert and the wonderful textures of the desert. They suggested that we add bold plantings with bands of color and lines of boulders that direct the view, the visitor's line of view towards the entrance. This sketch shows that those boulders in this general area kind of pointing towards the entrance for the eye there. They also suggested that we reduce the visual sign clutter that's out in that area and look for new opportunities for wayfinding signage. They suggested that we add masses of plantings in rows that represent the groves and the city's agricultural past. You can see that in the corner and then up at the entry. One idea to come out of the charrette was what they called a pixelated row of colorful plants that create a visual screen for the cars and define walkways. And you can see along the street edge there just layers of these colorful plants across the boundary there. The designers also suggested that we could provide directional cues for visitors by applying colored asphalt coating and opening the stainless steel gates for a more welcoming entrance to the building. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Steve to talk about some of the specifics of the plan.
Good morning, Vice Mayor and Council members. One of the things that came about in this was trying to pick up a feel of where it is that we live, and we looked at a variety of different sizes of decomposed granite and how that might work, but we came back to this feeling of a material that basically is up to about 3 inches in size on down. It gives more of a rustic feel of what the desert's like in many places. And this seemed to be a good way to depict what it was that we were trying to achieve, as well as a good way to stabilize the area in the event of some of our monsoon weather to dissipate and take care of the water runoff, if you will. The size of the granite, or the DG, excuse me, actually will facilitate and lock itself in place to help remedy those type of problems. But basically, the color was to pick up on the desert and to give us a unifying effect at the ground plane. Color was discussed by Laura just a moment ago. And the idea of the plant materials, for a long time, we've had a tendency to plant in the city materials that are not appropriate for the size or the space. And consequently, we end up having to manicure those, and it's an ongoing O&M cost in various places. So with this opportunity to look at this spine coming into the City Plaza building from the north side, it allowed us an opportunity to pick plant materials that are space appropriate, that will not grow out of their area, that can grow together and create a very healthy environment. A variety of different colors we've discussed and looked at, the purple, the white of lantana, and various other plant materials. You can start to see that we build, if you will, layers of the plant materials, ground covers into the shrubs. We pick sculptural elements that will highlight the area, that are typical of the area also, in a variety of shapes, colors, and forms. What you have in front of you right now, the elevation or the rendering, gives you a feel of what that would be like to come in from the northeast portion of the parking lot. And that's one of the problems that we had to address was the parking lot. That's what it is, and that's how people come. And so part of the design looked at how we could make that experience a more pleasant approach to the city's facility, especially given that's where we provide most of the access to the facility, or to the Mesa Center Plaza. One of the things we decided very early on was that it was okay to have the grant, it was okay to do the project, but we were concerned that it might just be a piece and not part of the entire palette that we could have. The sidewalk, as it comes from the north to the building, is the core of this site. It is the spine from which everything else happens. And given our funding at the time, we decided this was the most appropriate place to begin at this entryway. However, having said that, as you go forward with the plan and implement things in the future, we wanted to make sure that we had thought it through so that the next time a decision is made or the next time funding is available, we don't have to reinvent. We have looked at the design continuity of the entire site. We've looked at how that can be, the term is master planning. That's exactly what we have done. And then eventually we looked at it from the standpoint of phasing. And as I mentioned, the spine to us was the first and the most important feature to integrate into the project, the second being the actual entrance into the building. The parking areas on either the west or the east, they would be future phases. But in whole, the project would have that unifying theme and be able to be looked at as a whole instead of a bunch of pieces, if you will, that have been dropped in.
Facilities maintenance is going to be the ones that are directing this project. We're excited. We've been
trying to figure out how to achieve funding to do some of these things for a number of years, and we've always had problems with maintaining and making the grass look good, especially when we were not overseeding the lawns anymore. We felt that this was an exciting opportunity to make an optimal use of the grant money that was available and make it in the most public area so most people can see and understand what Xeriscape is about. We're also, as part of this project, and looking at an overall thing, as she mentioned, we're looking at the signage and trying to minimize the signage to so that it doesn't become too cluttered and as it has in the past. And we've also, as a result of our working with these landscape architects, are converting the trimming philosophies that we've implemented in the past with all these little snow cones everywhere that you look. And
poodle shapes.
Poodle shapes. There's lots of different names, but they're little rounded off plants that are kind of contrary to what nature intended for these plants. And it seems like whenever they start to flower, we go cut all the pretty parts off and leave the ugly parts remaining. So we're going to be changing that to
an origami garden.
Pardon?
What's that? You know, you trim all the plants.
Okay. It's just money, Vice Mayor. We can do that.
No. Yeah. Don't encourage him.
That's right.
Comments, questions?
So just once you recognize those that helped us put together, because all the work up to this point, the master planning, the design, has all been donated to us, and we've really appreciated the expertise from a variety of different individuals. You can see there on that slide. And we really, and they've met a variety of times with the staff. They've met with me a couple of times. And so this really has been a community effort from the profession and the landscaping coming together and giving us their, volunteering their work here. And now we're working as we go out for the project with the first phase with the budget, is working with local businesses because we want to use it as a demonstration project also and talk about how the xeriscaping works and all that. So it's more than just making hopefully the entryway pretty, but it's also our work of making it educational at the same time. So, and I appreciate the staff went out and got this grant, and I think it's an important part of what we need to do for kind of the visuals and opportunity education coming into Municipal Plaza. So we just want to give you a heads up, let you know what's coming. So.
And we get our $500 from ourselves.
Catherine will probably,
in the grass?
Catherine will probably pocket that, I'm sure, somewhere.
Put in for that? I mean, it's $500. I'll take it.
We might just remind everybody there's going to be a little bit of a mess for a while as we start this. And we're hoping to start for, tomorrow morning, barring any other questions. There will be a little bit of there's probably four parking spaces that will be blocked off so that we can have a staging area for our contractor, and then hopefully they should be finished by the first week in February so that we'll
stick them in the mayor's parking lot.
Yeah. It'll look decent before the debates that are coming.
Councilwoman Higgins.
Just really quick, we're not pulling out any of the original trees. We're working around all the
trees are not coming out. That's
so
correct.
That even the palm trees, everything's staying there.
Yeah.
Correct.
Right. And that's the beauty of the understory. That's going to really be what connects the landscape together now. Yes.
And part of it is allowing us to redo our irrigation to run lines that are for trees specific instead of trying to a one-size-fits-all landscape.
And that wasn't flood irrigated? None of that. Across the street is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Okay. That's by the big ash tree, Councilmember Higgins, that's correct. But basically we're changing a system that operates on gallons per hour to gallons per minute. Mm-hmm. So there's a substantial savings in the fact of water.
Thanks. We would like to, we put together some certificates because we really did appreciate these folks taking time to out of their schedules to help us on this project. So I'd just like to recognize, a number of them are in the audience and I've asked them to kind of stand up and come forward when we call their name. Jeff Engelman of J2 Design with his two behind the scene assistants of Rick Campbell and Clayton Franklin. Great. Trevor Barger of Espiritu Loci, the organizer of our charrette. Mark Beyer, the design element, and Jeff Anderson of the design element. Not everybody was able to come this morning, but we're really glad that some could. Christopher Jones of the Sweet Design Group. Steve Vollmer of Vollmer and Associates, Brett Anderson of Anderson Barron, Andrew Barron of Anderson Barron, and Richard Soka of Tanaik Landscape Architects, and Wendy Lesueur of Lesueur Design.
Excellent.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
We'll make sure they get those. I'm sure they're on recycled paper, right?
Yes.
Yes, they are.
Excellent.
Oh, yeah.
And Trevor is no stranger to helping us create a vision of the future. Trevor's done a lot of work over in the Gateway area. So I was wondering why you were here, Trevor, because I saw you back there. We don't have any DMB stuff on here. By the way, in this age of instant communication, somebody from my district texted me, and it's topiary. So I knew I had the wrong word. I said origami. I didn't know what the hell I was talking about. We're going to have a folding garden up here. So thanks to the person who sent topiary. They know more than I do about origami and topiaries, apparently. So, and no, we're not doing that. So moving on very, very quickly. Item number three is to hear a presentation discuss the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport aircraft maintenance repair and overhaul facility project. This has been in the works for a number of years. Finally, get to welcome some folks I've become very familiar with and bring in some jobs to the Gateway area. Scott, 1T.
It's all about conservation. good morning, Vice Mayor, members of the council. We're excited to be here. This has been a project in the works for probably year and a half, I'm going to guess, from the first time Lee and I met over in his office. I think a couple of you have been over to his office and seen how much equipment you can smash into a 55,000 square foot facility. Today we're going to change that opportunity and talk a little bit about that. I want to take a minute. This is truly a partnership across many different areas, a unique structure that we're going to talk about. We have the airport with Casey Denny, Assistant Director of the airport. We have Lee Benson, President of Able Engineering. We have Scott Ruby, our bond counsel, Larry Gibbons from Wedbush, our financial advisor, and then several others, our engineering, our city attorney's office have been involved. Just to kind of recap, we're here about 9 months ago talking about an MOU between the airport, city, and Able to talk about a deal structure. And want to talk briefly how we got to this point is the airport has done very well over the last few years getting additional development out to that area. One of the challenges of those is most of our buildings have been 50,000 square feet and smaller. And that worked good for some of the clients we have out there. But as we've worked with GPEC and others, and as Casey brings other leads in here, the larger users that need buildings over 50,000 or over 100,000, we simply lack that ability. And so the challenge is we've seen probably 3 to 4 over the last year and a half that have simply said we're very interested. But with today's market and available buildings across the U.S. available, they simply move on to other locations. While they like Gateway and love to be here, it's the lack of physical facilities that really prevents them moving forward. So Casey and others got together and figured out we've got to be able to answer that question. And so we came up with the idea of coming up with a structure to fund a facility, an MRO facility, maintenance, repair, and overhaul facility, which basically is much like you have your car, you can take it in to go get service. It's much the same thing for aircraft. And at that same time, we met with Lee and started that discussion. So the idea came, let's partner the two together to be able to attract an MRO user and to build a facility and to also have the airport gain experience in the bond market. They have never issued bonds for a facility such as this before. So this would be a learning opportunity for them. Have an opportunity for them to go through the bond process. They've been able to meet Standard & Poor's and Moody's, get that process, and that is really kind of a precursor for what we all hope is the Eastside Terminal, where we'll be going out and doing some significant bonding for that. But as the MOU talked about 9 months ago, we've come to the next stage. We've come to agreement that the airport has designed, bid, and will build a facility of 180,000 plus square feet for a cost not to exceed $22 million. Our commitment is to support that bond is the city commits to make lease payments equal to the bond obligations for that 25-year bond. We're really, I kind of joke, we're kind of the father standing behind the son trying to get their first car. You know, the Lenny agent's going, it's nice to meet you, but
you
where's dad?
You stole my analogy, so you will have to pay for that.
Great minds think a lot.
You know, my 17-year-old son is going through this very same thing. He's going to be turning 18 next month, and we're at a point where he needs to apply for credit card because he's going off to school next year.
and he can't get credit on his own. So we have to stand behind him for a period of time so that he could build his credit, and then he could start working on his own. But he pays the debt on that credit card, and it's very much the same thing going on here today.
Absolutely. So the airport will build it. We'll stand behind them and commit to a lease that we'll talk about briefly here for 40 years, but 25 years will be that to make the bond payments. And then we'll turn around, we'll talk with a tenant, Able Engineering, that will lease that facility from us for 25 years. The tenant, Able Engineering, we'll let Lee speak here in a minute about his company, and he is the father of several companies. He's got some great stories about his growth, not only with Able Engineering, but other endeavors he has. They agreed and they have fulfilled their commitment to provide the airport at their cost, the airport, the plans for the entire building. So they had a Colley architect draw this building to create all the drawings and architectural renderings, submit it to the city, went through the whole process. So we literally have a permit ready to be pulled if this project is approved Monday evening. The airport went out and bid that. It was opening on July 4th of this year. We had 11 bids received. I think we had the pre-bid meeting. I think we had 55 contractors in the room looking at the project, representing 15, 20 contractors. 11 submitted bids. It was a full house, a low bid. I think we're familiar with this company, D.L. Withers. They do several of our firehouses. They came with a low bid. And hopefully, if everything goes well and we receive approval Monday night, we'll start construction in April. That Lee likes to get in there July 1st, but we said give us at least till early 2013. The location, if you can think of the terminal, terminal is up to that top area, and this is down by the fuel farm. If you think of where the tower is, we're just to the southwest of that. So it is a large site. It's 13 acres. This is the facility, 186,000 square feet. If you think of the Cessna building out there, Cessna building is just under 100,000, so this is almost twice the size of that. This will be the largest structure on the airport.
Last question.
Yes, Councilwoman Higgins.
Scott, can you go back in a sec? It's actually not on the slide. Why? What's the problem with getting Lee in there in July like he wants? He needs to get working in Mesa.
Well, I wish we could have a 90-day construction period, but it takes a little longer.
You said you're starting when?
We're going to start April of this year.
It's January, right?
It's January.
What takes so long?
We're going to approve, hopefully receive approval.
Okay, well, money.
If you go out to bonds, we'll have to go out and sell bonds, and that'll probably take us to the end of February, and then about 30 days for notice to proceed to the contractor. So about April 1st, we'll start building the facility. It's about a 10-month construction period for that.
But Lee's not happy. We want to make him happy.
We're going to get to him as fast as we can. Believe me, we'd love to get him in there earlier.
I think Lee's happy. He just could be happier.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
So I'm going to turn a couple minutes over to Lee to talk about his company. It's a great story. So Lee.
All right, so again, good morning, everyone. It's great to be back. When we first talked, we had estimated to have about 250 employees in the facility within a year or two after moving in. We're already at 320 employees for the aerospace group, so we're growing a lot faster than we had thought. We actually added 100 jobs last year alone, probably add at least another 50 jobs this year. And then we started a new business called Evaluate to Win. And within 5 years, they actually should have more employees than the aerospace company. And we'll keep it all out there as well. Just sort of an update, a reminder of what we do. We repair, overhaul, and manufacture aircraft parts. And we do work for aircraft operators all over the world. Half the business is rotor wing, so helicopter operators. The other half is fixed wing operators. And it holds pretty strong that about a third of our business as we grow is international business. So we're doing a lot to bring work back into the country. And again, we're even competing in China. We're taking work out of there regularly now on price because our competitors over there can't beat us on price. And we're really proud of that. So making a lot of progress. Expect by the time we move in, which would be sometime hopefully spring of next year, we'll have north of 400 employees just for the aerospace companies going in.
Lee, I think that's an important point. I mean, you're beating foreign competitors on price and quality, and you're bringing jobs here in Mesa, in the United States. And the salaries are, median salaries are about what?
Well, as far as the salaries go, they're around $100,000 now.
And salary and benefits.
And our full benefits, hourly wages, you know, the lowest end, entry level, no experience whatsoever is about $12, and they run up to about $40 an hour, depending on what it is.
Good paid jobs, good salaries, good benefits, and you're competitive in bringing business here, proving it can be done.
It's all about working hard and smart and keeping a focus on being the best value alternative, no question. You know, I hear a lot of talk about giving back to the community and people like getting involved with different things. I think the best possible thing that I can do to give back to the community, great jobs. That's
absolutely
it. So, and we're doing it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lee. And I think one of the things that excites us especially is that if you look at this slide, a few of their major customers, it's most of the air carriers, most of the car companies. So we look at this as an opportunity to have a great ambassador, not only for what Lee does, but for the airport. We often have room for additional users out there. And this model allows us, if we want to go forward and do additional projects, that this is a new model that we could potentially use also. So we're excited. You know, this is such an interesting structure that, let me just run through it. Able did commit to, and they had to design and engineer the project. They will invest at least $6 million, and I think with Lee's growth, I think he'll probably even surpass that. But he's already at 320. You know, the original MOU said he had to have 250, so he's already surpassed that. And that he would cease negotiations with other cities and towns across the U.S. So, you know, the goal is if Monday evening works well, we can get this project moving forward.
Okay.
The airport will issue tax-exempt airport bonds. They will apply for military reuse zone, which is pretty specific in Arizona. It's a great incentive for aerospace companies. It exempts them from county and state sales tax, not city. We'll still get the city, and gives additional real and personal property tax breaks, as well as employee tax benefits. They'll be responsible for the construction of the facility. They'll actually be the ones owning the facility. The city will enter in with them a 40-year lease. And we'll talk about briefly why we need a 40-year lease for that. And then they'll also assist ABLE in seeking the MRZ designation. The other thing, if I remember rightly, you will be likely going after foreign trade zone designation.
Absolutely.
So again, the city will enter into a 40-year lease. And largely that deals with, as we stand behind or stand with the airport on issuing bonds, we need to show that there is a benefit to the city, and then so the bonds will be for 25 years, and really we're a pass-through on the financing, so the lease payment that ABLE will make to the city will basically be the bond amount that will pass to the airport, who will then make the bond payment. From years 25 to 40, that's where we have an opportunity to recapture the benefit of the project, meaning the bonds will be retired, and so all additional lease revenue will come to the city, and the city can decide how to utilize that, whether they reinvest that into the airport. Now, currently, we invest $1.7 million into the airport today. This may be an opportunity to cycle those monies generated on that lease to make that payment. It's just a discussion that we have from years 25 forward, how to utilize that revenue generated off that. Again, we'll enter into a 25-year sublease with ABLE. That sublease will have three additional five-year extensions if ABLE so chooses. We'll assist ABLE in seeking job and training and workforce development grants, and the city will be assisting the airport on the construction management process of the project. So, again, the city has a protection that ABLE has, once they sign that lease, is they're committed to the project. They have the responsibility to make those lease payments, but then cycles through to make the bond payments. And then even in the event that ABLE breaks the lease, they still have a legal responsibility to make sure that their lease payments are paid. Now, okay. We're confident, as you see here today with Lee, his companies continue to grow. And even, I guess what we'd say is in the worst case situation, if ABLE, for some reason, isn't able to perform in year 10 or 15, we have enough other interests out there at Gateway that we think we could refill the facility to make it worthwhile. And as again, the other thing is we've structured in the agreement that in the event that the project, let's say goes dark, and those bond payments still need to be made, we have put in the documents that our current commitment to the airport of $1.7 million, whatever is necessary to make the annual bond debt payment would come out of that existing $1.7
million. We have the choice.
We have a choice.
We have the choice to do that.
Okay. The city manager has a choice.
Well, council.
Yeah, in council. So,
Hi, remember us?
Yes. So on Monday, we'll be asking for approval of a 40-year lease with the airport, a sublease with Able Engineering. And I think it's important that Lee's already talking about outgrowing that facility. And so one of the things we structured in the lease is if he so chooses to finance his own expansion of that project, so let's say add another 50,000 square feet, and he pays for that on his own dime, that he gets the benefit on the extensions to set that lease rate for that next 10 years at that current rate. So there's incentive for him to expand. We want to see that expansion. That means it's additional more jobs. And remember, at the end of the life of this, the project ultimately comes back to the airport. So that'll be a fixed asset for the airport. To do this, this makes it sound very simple. The next part is where it's really the structure between the airport and the city that are critical. And we spent a lot of time with Scott Ruby figuring out how to structure this, or we could basically be a father standing behind the airport to make sure that they have the ability to go out and issue bonds. So there is a series of documents that are tied to the bond issuance as well as the relationship between the city and the airport. First, the trust agreement between us and the U.S. And the Airport Authority and the Bank Association, which basically sets out the terms of the series bonds. And then a number of other documents, continued disclosure certificate, and these are typical for bond issuances, letter of representation, official statements, that these all go into. And the last one that we really want to make a point of is the restate of the joint powers agreement. And that joint powers agreement is where the parties, Gilbert, Queen Creek, Gila River Indian Community, City of Phoenix, and Mesa are all members of the joint powers authority. And in this agreement, what we've put in there is for our investment, this up to $22 million investment will be included as credit for our investment into the airport. We want to make sure that our investment is captured in this joint powers agreement. So that's a key document for us. So on Monday night, we'll come forward with requesting formal action.
Monday morning, we go to the...
Yes, Monday morning, we'll be at the board,
airport board, and then we'll come back here in the afternoon.
Absolutely. So with that...
My compliments, Mr. Brady, to the staff of Economic Development. This is, in my opinion, an exceptional deal, and this is an outstanding way to help businesses thrive in Arizona and Mesa specifically. We have a great company here that does domestic and even foreign business. They are extremely competitive. They're growing. They're providing great jobs, great benefits, and great salary. And we were able to bring them here, not on a giveaway, but the incentive is to help them finance so that they can grow their company. And also taking advantage of the foreign trade zone. It's very creative and yet very conservative in how we are moving forward. This is truly a partnership between the public sector and the city of Mesa, the airport. Thank you very much for your vision in moving forward with this and seeing how this fits into the growth and future of Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport, and the private sector who says this is how we can build jobs here in Mesa. So, outstanding work for everybody. I look forward to voting for this on Monday. Anyone else? No. Big thumbs up over here on the
good
left
job.
Side.
Good job, guys.
Good job. Good job. Well done. What the heck? I'm going to give it up. I'm making the city attorney nervous. Just the clock. She'll get over it.
I know.
That's why she's plugging her ears right now. Item 2D. We've been on item 2 forever. 2D is to hear a presentation discuss Southeast Mesa Economic Infrastructure Update.
And Mayor and Council, we can go through this pretty quickly. We've got a lot of slides.
Yes.
But we'll go quickly.
Quickly.
The reason is that we wanted to bring this to Council. There were several items on your agenda that related to some of the projects that are out in Southeast Mesa. And as we were kind of going through it, reviewing the agenda, I thought, you know, it'd be nice to kind of quickly just pull together the big picture of our investment and what's happening out there. If we can kind of get one high-level vision of that. So I... The dynamic duo of Beth and Scott will help us out here.
AM 620. No, I'm just kidding.
So Beth will be doing most of the speaking.
Yeah. No.
All right. Thank you, Vice Mayor, members of the council. We're back to talk about Southeast Mesa. And really, this is really coupled with the previous discussion about ABLE Engineering. If we didn't do some of the things that we've been doing over the last few years, we wouldn't have been able to do the ABLE project. Because of the city infrastructure that we've invested over the last 5-7 years, allows terminal expansion, allows projects like ABLE to go forward, ASU. So we know the HEAT initiative, we know the Aerotropolis initiatives, where it came out of the Gateway Strategic Plan, which is the idea that the engine is out for that area, is the airport, and how to structure things around that. And when we went through that process, infrastructure was the key item to get that going. So let's just first, educational attainment. This is the ASU Chandler-Gilbert area. Is this going to rotate? Well, if this rotated,
it works.
There we go.
You'll
see we have EVIT down on the south end. We have ASU Polytechnic and Chandler-Gilbert Community College. And then other investments that are going on out there. You know, ASU is currently undergoing significant investment of 140. Over the last few years, they've invested about $147 million. You'll see the dorms that are going on right now, and soon they'll break down a recreation center out there. They anticipate additional improvements going on in the next few years as well. EVIT that just opened up, great facility. That was only phase one. They have additional phases to go for that. And then Chandler-Gilbert, To go back to the ABLE discussion, one of the reasons ABLE decided to go out to Gateway is because of the relationship they could build with Chandler-Gilbert Community College and their aerospace and then their...
Forget EVIT.
We just did
EVIT.
Okay. Sorry, I had to step out for a moment.
For their maintenance program, that was a key driver for Lee making the decision to build a relationship out with Chandler-Gilbert and ASU. We have the aerospace. Obviously, we talked about ABLE Engineering. We have the terminal. If you haven't been out in the terminal recently, you can see the next phase creeping up above the fence lines now for the next 30,000 square feet expansion. You have Cessna, Hawker, Beechcraft, and others, and then the future east side terminal. I want to take a second here as we have spring training coming up in March. That is the high season for the airport. Just give you an update. Last year we did 365 flights out of Gateway in March. This year we're scheduled for 570. Flights in March, about a 56% increase.
I was mentioning to Lou Wolf, the owner of the A's, about how, and I think it was yesterday, was the first inaugural flight of Allegiant to the Oakland area. They're thrilled about that. So we've got this with just enough with the Cubs activity, we get the A's in. You know, that'll even add to it with the flight coming out of Oakland. So he was really excited to hear about that.
And I think Spirit's first flight starts out February 9th.
Out of Oakland.
Yeah. No. So it's Vegas. And then in March it'll be off to Dallas.
Vegas and Dallas. Thank you. There's just so much growth. It's hard to keep track.
It is. My days are busy. So obviously here's a few of the other investments that have gone out there for private side. I think when we talk about infrastructure out here, one of the key factors that we're all aiming towards, kind of the big engine, is that future east side terminal. And some of the early projections is to get over to that east side between utilities and improvements and aprons and taxiways and all that. That is a significant number.
And Vice Mayor and Council, even before we get to that component of one of the conversations we want to have Council, this kind of goes back to the conversation we were having about utilities, is we need to get ahead of this growth with our infrastructure, with our roads and our utility lines, so that can accommodate that growth. And this is going to be a real, it won't be long. I mean, we're already pushing the envelope to a certain degree on the west side. We can't hold back growth because we don't have a place for the planes to park and terminal. So we're working with the airport on trying to define when that time would be in the future. But we've already moving forward with what would almost be the final design of the final phase of terminal expansion on the west side already. I mean, it's not built, but it's in design. So it's only a few years away from we will be essentially built out. So the idea and the preparation to go to the east side, even with just putting in the streets and the infrastructure, is going to be coming on us pretty soon. So something we need to start putting in our forecasts and, you know, anticipating in our capital improvement program.
You know, tourism, we're hoping for tourism to arrive out there. We know the Gaylord deal, and we continue to see movements and improvements in the structure. So then the technology. I'll give it a second here. The big one is we're all familiar with the First Solar project out there at Signal Butte and Elliott. You know, that's 1.2 million square feet of investment, and that's the first of hopefully four phases. You can see the facility there. And I think the important thing is up in the right-hand corner of that is you can see some of the city facilities. And that was one of the main reasons that First Solar decided to locate in that area, is because of our ability to provide utilities very quickly and of adequate size to handle their needs. So just a quick rundown. You know, these are large numbers, but you can tell the private investment has followed our city investments. And so then we're going to go into our city investments.
So quickly, I'll cover this. This is an overview slide, and I think when I look at this slide, the large landmass that we're dealing with out here kind of overshadows the major projects we've built when you first look at it. So we put some slides in to walk through the projects quickly, and there's a couple on the agenda this week. One of the things that I always try to remember, our economic development folks keep telling me, is that Southeast Mesa is essentially about the same size in landmass as Paris, France. I haven't checked the cartography on that, but that does require a lot of infrastructure to serve. So starting, and many of these you've seen over the last 5 years, we bring them to you in onesie twosies, and sometimes you don't get to see how they all fit together in the end. Ray Road, utilities and street, $9.5 million, really ties Ellsworth and the east side together, so across the top of the airport.
And I think on the Ray Road, one of the reasons we did the Ray Road is not only provide utilities to the area, is really that's at the doorstep for the future East Side Terminal.
Fire Station 215, this is actually a multi-facility located on the southwest side of the airport, serves the airport, the community, and there's a police presence. ASU Innovation Way under construction right now. If you've been out there, it is a little difficult to get around, and there are water issues from day to day. Much, much old infrastructure in this, but when we're done with this project, it will define the campus area more clearly, and we're putting in all new water and sewer facilities with it. Power Knowledge Corridor, part of that's under construction today. The first phase of it is we're working in the RWCD Canal and across the floodway, and we completed that this weekend. Soon coming forward with another contract to go forward. Major regional project. We have two other funding partners in it. $30 million project. Only about $10 million of that is city bond funding for utilities and streets. It's the first real major phase of the Power Knowledge Corridor, so we'll be implementing some signage and visualization of the Knowledge Corridor. Sossaman Road Waterline, this is actually not specifically directly in the area, but further north, and the key to this is we had only one water feed down into the area. We wanted to be able to get fire flows, and we wanted to be able to get reliable water supply. So north of the freeway, we actually put in a couple of miles of water line to put in the missing link for getting a second water feed down into the system. Fire Station 219, which is one of the reasons First Solar was very pleased to locate. We have a very strong infrastructure system going in at Signal Butte and Elliott. Fire Station 219 played a big part in that. It's under construction now. I think we're putting in windows, if you've been out there lately, soon to be open. Signal Butte and Elliott improvements we did with the fire station. This was the first of actually what will end up being three projects, but it's right at the intersection north on Signal Butte, $2.9 million. The next phases of those projects are being put in along with First Solar. The red line's what is under design, which will be happening in by the end of the year. It's about $9.7 million with streets and utilities. Second phase, if they continue to build out the fabs, we've got additional frontage. Dan Clevenger, our transportation director, and a member of my staff, Bob Draper, went to the county, and we secured some funding to also do that section on the north side of Elliott. So we'll be incorporating that into the design and proceeding forward with a full-width roadway in that area.
Beth, on the Signal Butte and Elliott improvements, I received some phone call and some emails for the first time, not complaining about the flooding last month after the rain, but saying thank you so very much for all the work. They said it rained for two straight days and not a drop of water.
stayed on the freeway. It all went where it was supposed to go, out of the way. So, well done. It only took us a while, but
so very awesome.
Yeah.
Well, this is the sewer line we just are completing right now today, which will go east to serve the first solar site. This bid last week, 24 Freeway. I think it's about $71 million in construction was the bid last week. We'll be starting construction in April. You can see us out there today digging in Ellsworth Road, happily digging with barricades up. And we are putting in some utilities, water and sewer primarily in advance of the freeway. So just under about $925,000, I believe that's wrong there on the number, but $925,000, just under $1 million in utilities. And then on the agenda this week, we have a couple of projects. The Central Arizona Project Turnout is one of the first projects to actually bring water down to the future Signal Butte water plant that you saw kind of catty-corners from First Solar. So this is the next major initiative in providing water to the southeast area. We started with the turnout. It is a difficult project because we are building on a major canal, which is running full all the time. So we never got to see it dry before we started. So we're back on the agenda to get a little more money for that project. This is a picture of the canal structure under construction with water in the canal. And you can see the depth of the structures. If you actually look at those little bitty people at the bottom in the upper left-hand photo, the magnitude of this facility. And then we also have on the agenda the sulfide station at Pecos and Ellsworth that we're putting in. As with most infrastructure, when we have a large area of land, many times we end up having to put in interim infrastructure that gets us to some point in the future until the major sewer lines were built. So back in 91, the city built an interim lift station in 7 miles of force main to pick up the small amount of wastewater that was flowing in the area and ship it over to the treatment plant. Today, we now have a more robust sewer system, so we can decommission the lift station, and we are taking that out of our operation and maintenance budget, basically just going to gravity lines. But when we do that, we also need to address odor control. The original sulfide control station was built in 91, 20 years ago, and it's showing its age as well as it's way too small, and it was really only sized for the interim condition. So that also is on your agenda. So if we step back and we take a look at it, what the importance of this infrastructure is, besides me getting to put up barricades and having fun playing in the streets, is that we also get with it a lot of non-city investment. If you look at everything that Scott reviewed today, you're really looking at just a little under $1 billion, up to potentially $1.8 billion in the future. And for that, we had a city investment of about $71 million to about $88 million. So you can kind of see we're talking about millions in city money and billions in other investments that come into the area as a result of that. And that's it.
I have one question on this. Maybe Mr. Brady, you might be the best one to ask. How are we doing financially in order to be nimble enough to respond to economic development activities out in this area? Because there's a substantial portion of Southeast Mesa that doesn't have the necessary infrastructure for the type of growth that we anticipate. And when we look at First Solar as an example, we had to quickly find the financing in order to do the road improvements and other infrastructure improvements that were necessary. I think there are going to be plenty of opportunities, particularly inside the loop, just north of Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport, to have job and economic development growth. So are we?
Well, so the key is, so what was helpful when First Solar did come to us is while we had to readjust priorities, the good news is most of those projects, I think all of those projects, related to First Solar were already in our capital improvement program. They were just further out. It was just the timing. So that's the key, is when we develop our capital improvement program, you know, in a 4 or 5 year perspective, is let's make sure we're trying to anticipate kind of things you're talking about, because we can manage the payment and how we, the financing of it, if it's in the five-year forecast, you know, and we can swap and move things around, which is kind of what we did. But that helps us know and the council know, okay, here's the plan. Here's how much we plan on investing in the future of capital improvements, whether it's here or whether it's in, you know, the downtown revitalization area, all throughout the whole city. So that's where the key is when we come and we're planning on coming, I think we're coming in late February, first of March, with our capital improvement plan discussion. That's where we, the council, kind of, you know, share with us too, try to anticipate where we think in the next 5 years or so for where that growth and where that need will be. That has been one of our strengths in competing for the First Solars and, you know, even Able and Ellie and many others across the city, is that we have a fairly robust infrastructure in place. And we control the water delivery systems. We control the wastewater treatment facilities. We have good streets. And so all of those things are probably some of the biggest economic development tools we have. But we got to, you know, every year we got to kind of sit back and make sure we plan that out ahead. And that's what we want to do here in the next couple of, or in the next month or so, come to council and lay out what we're kind of looking at, get your feedback, and then come back and come up with a five-year plan.
So another Able Engineering or First Solar comes to us, say they want to put 100,000 square feet on Elliott and Ellsworth. We are flexible enough to figure out how we can do it. We've got
the street infrastructure, the water, the sewer. Because if you don't have that, it doesn't matter where you go. If you go out in the middle of some community, and they may have cheap land, but if they don't have the infrastructure, it's not happening. At the end of the day, the longest part of the conversation with First Solar wasn't about their tax incentives. It was how fast are you going to be able to get the infrastructure to us so we can open up. That, the bottom line, that becomes one of the critical elements in economic development.
Right. That's why having the city engineer and representative of economic development.
That's why these two are best friends now. That's it's part of that effort here.
I don't know that they're best friends.
Well,
I've seen them
they do a good job of acting.
They get along.
These guys are always giving me more work, so that's good.
City Manager and Vice Mayor, I think the other thing important is we will have additional private partnerships coming through with. For example, in February, we'll be coming back to this council with DMB for a discussion about a community facilities district. Within that community facilities district, that will allow them to install public infrastructure through some bonding opportunities for that. So that will additionally provide some additional infrastructure out there. So the good news is, you know, 3 years ago, we had some struggles out there. You know, now we have several different sites that could handle a First Solar, whereas 3 years ago we only had basically one. So the amount of space that's available for development continues to expand with this.
You mean 6 years ago? Because I got here 5 years ago. So there are things improved.
Absolutely.
There you go.
And just real quickly, we're focusing on Southeast Mesa, but we're using the same formula even for downtown today. That's why we've been doing all the work in the alleyways and light rail. And so we need to think about this. Not, I mean, today we talk about Southeast Mesa, but it's whether it's the Fiesta District, whether it's downtown or wherever, that's the kind of planning we need to put in place.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much. I was just looking at this. What happened to item 3?
Well, we figured 2 was so long.
That we'd skip 3 and we're going to go to 4? All right. Yeah. So we'll stick with item number 4. 4A and 4B. I'll take a motion on both of those. Moved by Councilmember Kavanaugh, second by Councilwoman Higgins. All in favor? Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Item number 5, hear reports on meetings or conferences attended. Anyone? Meetings?
Yeah, lots of
Councilwoman
stuff.
Higgins.
I believe past weekend was the MLK celebrations. And we had a very, very, very fun time riding in the MLK parade in downtown Mesa with the historic fire truck, driven by a delightful young firefighter who had more fun than most people I've ever seen, waving at all the kids and they waving back. It was very fun. And I had a house from Sunshine Acres. So I had 8 kids riding in the historic fire truck.
It was a beautiful
morning,
too.
They had so much fun. It was so much fun. And then on Saturday, I attended the Tuskegee Airmen commemoration thing at the Commemorative Air Force Museum. I would say there was 2,000 people there, easily. Wow. And packed, wonderful event. The mayor spoke and was more inspirational than usual. And no, seriously, it was really a great, it was really, really good. And there were probably a dozen original Tuskegee Airmen plus other World War II pilots, which, you know, when you do the math, the youngest can possibly be maybe 87 into their 90s, right? Because we're celebrating the 70th year of Tuskegee Airmen, right? So you figure you started even late in the war and you were a pilot. Anyway, we figured 85, 90, these guys were amazing. One guy there was 102, just celebrating his birthday. So it was great, and it was just an awesome event, a lot of fun, all in Mesa and using the parking lot to the south for the couple thousand people that were there. So it was fun. That's my MLK report.
Excellent.
Anyone else? Point of personal privilege, I am going to announce my son, Tyler, received his letter. He was accepted to the Barrett Honors College at ASU. So he will be studying in the honors program and engineering, Beth. He will be studying engineering as well. So if anybody knows, anybody who knows can put together a in-home studio, I have an extra bedroom suddenly. I shouldn't say that. My wife's going to yell at me so hard. Anyway, Mr. Brady, items from Citizens Present.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'll help give you an update. Councilwoman Higgins has her pancake breakfast this Saturday.
Yes, this Saturday.
At Fire Station 208, which is at McKellops Road. And what's it?
Greenfield
and Higley. So invite everyone out there from 8 to 10. And then we'll see council. We do have, I think we mentioned, or Chief Stubbs mentioned, we'll give another briefing on the grant program that the fire is going at. So we'll start our council meeting just a little bit early on the 23rd. Or we'll have a study session prior to the council meeting on the 23rd.
Thank you, Precious. Dan.
Just in addition, Friday morning we have our District 3 coffee at the Dobson Branch Library, and Heather Wolf will be our guest speaker at the library, and we appreciate the library for hosting
us.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Excellent. Well, this is what happens when I cross things out too early. So that was meetings and general information. So now we'll go to items from citizen present. Are there any requests to speak? In that case, we will be adjourned.